This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one cuck boy. Featuring, joining me as always in the High and Mighty studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris, who just peaced out with his toy. Also joining me in the High and Mighty studios is longtime buddy, first time guest, put it together for writer, podcaster, Andrew Goldstein!
Ew.
There we go! I almost started giving you a wrestling intro based solely on knowing you.
Give me a gimmick. Just landed in LA. Yep. Came right to the Gabris compound.
You're in a full sweatsuit, which shows that you are a New Yorker, but not in LA. You're in a full black sweatsuit, and it's like 91 degrees here.
Yeah, I fly like a woman. I have full sweats, hoodie, the whole deal.
Tights, leggings, a hoodie, and a neck pillow. Goldstein, dude, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh,
I'm so pumped, and we'll plug it at the end, but I love your podcast too.
And
sorry
you're coming on.
I'm gonna be doing
Golich, former guest of the pod here,
game shows episode. Yeah, you're a podcasting partner.
We are doing a day of LA recordings.
I know, I'm
and
super
you
pumped.
Are doing it, so we're excited.
I'm so pumped. What a way to get on your podcast is wait till you fly to where I live.
Exactly.
And here's the worst part. I'm gonna be in New York on like September 6th for like 10 days.
Oh, we
with way
you.
More free time. Before we go any further, you know about this, Andrew, but I'm going to read some reviews of my podcast. So, shitheads or first-time listeners, as you know, if you rate me 5 stars on the iTunes customer reviews and roast me in the comments, I will read them. So, for example, here you go. This is called Special Guest, LJ- for this app. Okay. I literally love Glom Jabrish in every guest appearance he's ever made on podcasts that aren't his own. If I could, I would only listen to episodes of Improv for Humans, Hooray Show, and Comedy Bang Bang that feature him. Okay, so far this is a compliment. It better fucking get angry. To listen to this show is a regular test of my love for his character work. I wish his podcast was a direct ripoff. HeadGum may want to consider something like that. Blob Hairbrush, I can count on one hand the episodes I've liked, and I've listened to them all. That was kind of more complimentary than anything else.
I weirded out at how nice that was.
Yeah, it was a little too nice. I mean, it's unfortunately the actual criticism
there
of this
show. There was an eclipse yesterday, so maybe we're in like a reverse time continuum.
Oh, yeah, fuck, dude, I didn't even think of that. We're in an alternate dimension.
It's all positive reviews.
No, I can't have that.
But they still mispronounce your name.
Yeah, I cannot have positive reviews.
Glom Hairbrush.
It'll fuck me up too much. I already have a raging ego. I actually need these roasts to bump me back down to tolerable. This is actually, the hard part about reading that review is that it's the legitimate criticism of my podcast is that it's not as funny as comedy. But those are comedy podcasts. My podcast is me talking
to friends.
Those
are shows where there's like pre-production and time put in and people's lives are on the line with their salaries.
Yeah. This podcast is literally something I do so that I don't just get high and play video games all day. I did work out this morning, but you'll hear more about... Hey, as anyone who knows, any listener of the podcast knows, I worked out today, so I'll talk about it for the next month and a half.
You look good.
I feel good. I'm doing great. Wait, hold on. This is another compliment. What are people doing here? Hold on. Let me try to scan through. Okay, here we go. He's just like me from KJ Animal Mother. Are you unsuccessful in your chosen profession and have a poor self-image? If you are in a decade-long pattern of self-destruction, then look no further. John Gashbrush's podcast is for you. 5 out of 5. This is all I have.
John Gashbrush.
I like it. Gashbrush is something very specific. That's where you comb pubic hair with?
Yeah, you comb the gash.
Yeah, only on
the gash
mighty, wound are we still calling vaginas gashes?
The gash wound that never heals.
The hatchet wound.
Yeah, the axe
slit.
Wound. I've heard it all.
Yeah. I heard it all from my father.
Never seen one. But
with language like this, you're not supposed to see it. The second you say gash, you're not allowed to see a gash. This is The Roast Stays Moist by Pink Budget. Preheat oven to 375 degrees. Grease large disposable baking pan with olive oil and butter. Put one John Gabris in the pan and baste with salty, peppery, rosemary, sage, butter mixture every 45 minutes for 5 hours. Garnish with coarsely chopped carrots, potatoes, celery, and onion while waiting for your perfectly roasted John Gabris to cook. You can listen to numerous episodes of this ridiculous podcast.
I feel like that review would have fit perfectly in the DC Pearson cooking episode.
Right, maybe that's when it came from. July 10th, it's quite possible. That's exactly
based in a dashi.
Oh, here we go. One last one, then we'll get Jan Gargis ruined the Big Lebowski for me because he made me realize what a bummer the dude would be in real life. Objectively terrible, but I never miss an episode. There you go.
I feel like Jan Gargis is a villain on Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Ride with me, Jan Gargis. We ride to the wall. Did you watch last night?
Oh, yeah. Or first of all, Sunday Twitter night? Hates it, and I'm loving this season because I understand shit for the first time in 7 years.
It's the lead, like...
I don't need it to be super intelligent.
Right. I read some review that said bad writing, still a great show. And I think that's the writing has gotten more mainstream. It's like, well, the show is more like, is he going to die? Last minute rescue. Is he going to die? Last minute rescue.
I remember like Improv 101. They were like, avoid Connection Island at the end of your scene right. where you try to make everything fit.
Yeah.
This season is Connection Island.
Right. And we've been working towards it, but it's almost like, don't you get the vibe a little bit that the creators of Game of Thrones were like, they got the red light. And they're like, oh, fuck, we have to wrap this up. And they like took 13 episode hour long seasons to build. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, shit, we have 16 episodes to get it all done. The flying here, dragons here, this, that, the boats are fast. The ravens are fast. Yeah.
Yeah. And no more like 13 week treks to from one side of the world to the other.
Right. The wall, like it's getting like to the wall was a season with Dinklage and Jon Snow. And now they've gone from the wall to other places in half an episode.
I haven't spent too much time in LA, but it's like when watching 24 and he was like, I'm 15 minutes out. And even I know you're never 15 minutes out anywhere in LA.
I know. We can go to the coffee shop on the corner and walk there and it would take us more than 15 minutes.
He would hop in the car and be in Pasadena to defuse a bomb within like the first 20 minutes of an episode.
That's really funny. Do you watch the show Bosch by any chance?
I don't.
I think you might like it.
Really?
It's very LA heavy to the point where like anytime they're outside.
So it's about Chris Bosch.
Yeah, it's really weird.
And
it's
he had that weird heart condition, had to retire, and then he becomes a private detective.
This is about... a dude, Bosch, who's like an ex-Navy SEAL, who's now a LA cop, doesn't play by the rules. He's kind of old-fashioned that way. And he's a total badass. And like his mom was a hooker who was murdered and it was covered up. So like there's like all these layers to it. But the fun thing about it is it's such an LA show. Apparently the books, Michael Connelly, he like... is a foodie that lives in LA, so like all of the scenes take place in like Birds or right. at like he's like
the Aziz Ansari of cop dramas.
Yeah, he literally says things like, no, the best Al Pastor is at this truck, you know. And then in this last season they're like waiting in line at Shake Shack and it's the new one and he's like, so what is this place? Nothing beats In-N-Out. Like it's the most LA right. conversation ever. And the show also, the reason this all came up is sometimes he'll be like parked in a car and it'll show the street signs.
Yeah.
Like it's like the only show I ever know that he's like, I'm on the corner of Pico and Western. I'm making a right heading north on Western. Like they go, apparently in the books too, it gives like his exact paths. Like he drives, he's like, he took Laurel Canyon to Melrose heading east on
And there's nerd super fans who are like, actually,
that's not the quickest way. But that is, LA turns you into that and it's like, oh, you're taking the 101? No way, not a 4. You want to go there?
Well, wait, since you brought up burgers real quick, since Shake Shack, it's the first one here.
Yeah, there is, I think, now two here, but our first one here. Yeah.
I get in a super heated, passionate debate with lots of people, but mostly Andrew Schultz, whenever he posts on any social media about how much he loves In-N-Out. I always put some kind of comment about how I'm team Shake Shack over In-N-Out, and we get in this, you know, he can be super intellectual about stupid shit.
And he's antagonistic as fuck.
So we get in these heated debates, and he's like, all you like is the bun. The bun is the only reason, you know, whatever. But I'm team Shake Shack.
I'm team, look, I love both. And you would think as like a lifelong New Yorker, but here's where I stand. I think it's a different burger.
I agree. That's what I, this is my argument.
It's a different price point.
Yeah.
Even like In-N-Out, like a double-double with cheese from In-N-Out is like $2.85.
Shake Shack is boutique.
Yeah, Shake Shack is.
Even though they're ubiquitous now, they're like in Dubai and shit.
Right. But it's still a $9 burger.
It's made with, you know,
Pat LaFrieda beef and all that shit. Yeah. I love them both. They're two different. And here's the only thing. In-N-Out does not stay well at all. Like 100%. You have to eat it there. You cannot drive it home. You cannot Postmates it. Shake Shack is better than that. Yeah.
Yes. At that. Travels well. I feel like Shake Shack's ingredients have decreased in quality. Lettuce is always disgusting. I don't get the tomato, but the lettuce to me, I always.
Are you a no tomato on burgers guy?
Never.
I'm a no tomato on sandwiches and burgers guy. Yeah.
I like tomato products. I don't like tomato in its raw form. I'm very picky. This could be the whole podcast is me, my peccadilloes about food.
We could talk. I mean, you are you are the burger.
I am in a burger club.
I reach out to you about burgers when I want to try a new one, or have you had this one?
Well, I went last time I was in LA. I went to Castles. Have you been there?
No,
Cassell's Castles.
Oh, I think it's called Cassell's.
2SS, yeah. 2L's. It's in Chinatown.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Very good.
I loved it. That's the best burger I've had in LA.
So the two burgers that I've heard very good things about that I still haven't had are that place and Apple Pan.
Apple Pan's cool. It's like it's like 1955, and like you expect.
You sit at the white section, eat a burger.
Yeah, you expect like somebody to get hosed down.
Right. Yeah, like, are you sure you want to sit at the counter? It seems like we're making a statement.
A lot of Trump supporters going there. No, but it's very old timey.
Yeah. Have you had Father's Office?
Yeah, you know, I need to try it again because I tried it at like the beginning of my burger obsession and I didn't like it. I found it to be a burger sandwich.
Right, it kind of is because it's on like rye, I think, or something like that.
Yeah. It's not. It's more of a meatloaf sandwich.
Right. It's really good. It's really good, but it's not a traditional burger and they don't let you do anything to it. Like
yeah, they're
Mineta
very
style.
Like militant. Yeah. I like umami.
I like umami too. I'm getting a little tired of it.
Well, it's like that was the big deal out here before it came east.
I feel like umami went the way of Shake Shack, where it was like, holy shit, this place is good. Now there's six of them. And am I over it, or do they just not taste as good? Are they not doing as good of a job anymore?
Not as much umami.
Right. Yeah. It's a little light on the mommy. Yeah.
And then Pie and Burger is somewhere I've always wanted to go, but it's in Pasadena. So like when the fuck?
Let's go. What time's your meeting?
I literally could cancel the meeting.
Let's get in the car and go get Pie and Burger. Well, we could talk burgers all day.
Yeah, it'll come up again.
It'll come up again. But what we did want to talk about.
Check out my Instagram at GoldsteinAndrew. You'll see like every burger I've eaten in the last like 6 years.
Yeah, and it's a lot.
Yeah.
We should talk.
I'm sipping Lipitor right now.
Guys, he's lying. It's a big glass of chopped meat with two. No tomatoes, but
tartar.
Let's talk about. We were going to talk about MTV Networks. Not growing up watching it, which is something we probably could also talk about, but specifically we're going to talk about working there because you and I, despite never truly, like only working together
very
briefly and or like
intermittently.
Yeah. And disconnected, like you working on Guy Code, but no writers were really there when we were shooting and you working on Charlamagne Show, but me only doing it once. But
right. But we did do Guy Code Honors, really where we kind of like established
we learned that like how many different people we had in all our mutual
friends.
Well,
I'll just say like my idea for pitching you like coming on and talking about MTV is like you've been on so many, and I've written and produced on so many,
and yet
we haven't like MTV produces so much content. We've rarely crossed paths,
right? And I was an intern at MTV
and all of, like 1515 in the Lodge,
1633. Yeah, so we thought maybe we should hash. What was your first MTV job?
Boiling Points.
Oh, awesome!
So I got hired as writer's assistant on the Comedy Central roast of Dennis Leary. By the way, first joke I ever got on TV.
Nice.
I have it framed from the script.
That's
awesome.
I got
a joke in Dennis's rebuttal.
Oh, cool.
John Stewart wasn't, he didn't show up. So the joke was John Stewart wanted to be here, but somebody put his car keys on top of his TV. He's still at home trying to get him, trying to reach them.
I love a classic short joke. Works.
And from there, John Blitt was one of the, through some of the coordinating producers and stuff from a show called Make My Day, which I PA'd on. Mm-hmm. It was like a reality show. It was a lot of the same producers.
That was like the positive prank show, right?
Yeah, whatever. And I kept in touch with Blitt, and he got me writer's assistant on The Roast through some people. And then he got Boiling Points, and he emailed me, and he said, hey, do you know any good PAs? And I was like, yeah, me. I was the worst PA. Ask anybody.
Right, but you just wanted to work on that show.
Yeah.
Because it was like a comedy forward show.
It was comedy. I wanted a gig.
And for those of you who don't know what Boiling Points are, because maybe you are under 34, but it's like the first MTV punk. It was like predates punk.
It was like the dope prank show.
Right. It was like how, and it was like all about setting a timer, like and how long the person could last before they boil
walk over. Into a coffee shop and something goes wrong with the change, and the guy's like giving you the business behind the counter, and there's a clock in the corner that's like ticking down from 3 minutes, and if they last without like blowing up at the guy, like, fuck you, give me my money back,
right,
you're out, go to the next guy.
And launched some really weird careers, like Dax Shepard, BJ Novak, Merritt, those guys were all punked.
The cast is amazing. Colton Dunn,
Billy Merritt.
Colton Dunn, who's on
Superstore. Yeah.
Billy Merritt, who was like Mr. UCB.
Yeah.
Allison Becker was on Parks and Rec.
Right.
Rebecca Johnson, who was one of the Beatdown Biddies, she's just on Glow.
Glow, yeah. Oh, shit, yeah. I blended Punked and Boiling Points in my head of who was there. But still,
Katie Dippold, who was like amazing screenwriter.
Who just wrote Snatched and
Insane cast.
Yeah. I forgot that Dippold was on that. Yeah.
Very briefly.
That was so.
She didn't have the heart to be pranking people and ruining their day. But anyway, so yeah, my first gig was Boiling Points. I was a PA, got promoted to associate producer, and the whole time, because the filter was so small of what worked as a prank, they were like, everybody pitch ideas, and they meant it. Like, everyone was pitching. I finally started to get ideas through the filter, and then once my ideas started getting produced, I just asked, I was like, hey, next time one of my ideas gets greenlit, can I write the script? And they were like, sure. So as an AP, I ended up writing 5 segments. When the third season, when like, all right, you're in your third season of an MTV show, the show gets a little more money. They were like, all right, we're going to bring in a third writer. And instead of hiring an outside person, they bumped me. And then once I became a writer in the MTV system, it was like 10 years.
Yeah. And I mean, you're doing that up until now.
My next gig after that was a Britney Spears countdown special. I have run the gamut.
MTV Networks is like a weird place to be a writer in a way. Because it's like...
It's non-guild.
It's like you're a writer, but you're also a segment producer and a post producer and a field
producer.
Everybody
is everything.
Yeah. And it's like a weird... Because like you saying I went from PA to AP, like I'm sure a lot of people who work in TV know this, but like MTV was so... Like, so structured. It's like you're a PA for around a year.
Yeah.
Then if you're on the same show, or hopefully you jump from shows, you'll eventually get AP. And then you get segment producer. And
there's
then you're
the
a producer. It's And it's the, like, the ladder is inverse in that you start making money with each step up, and you start doing less work with each
100%.
Step up. Yeah, and it's like the ultimate thing, and it's the reason why people stay at MTV and overwork themselves for shit money, or even stay at a high ranking job that if you were a producer on an ABC show, you'd make a fortune. If you're a producer on an MTV show, you can make $1,000, you know, $1,500 a week, which is great money, but not TV producer money necessarily.
Yeah, and a lot of people like become executives.
Yeah, it's just easy to stay there because the work gets you doing less, and it's the shit you're doing, and maybe it's a problem with MTV now, is it's like sort of what you did on the last gig. So it's like, yeah, I'm very good at this.
Yeah. Well, I just got into this whole, like, I loved award shows and live TV and stuff. And
yeah.
So like right out of the gate, I wrote like 5 Woody Awards, which was MTV U's award show.
Yeah, Donald I was Glover like the hosted Bruce one of those, I remember.
Yeah, I did that one with DC Pearson. And I was like the Bruce Valanche of the Woodies by that time.
Yeah.
Like I had done 5, I did like 5 New Year's shows, which we'll get into because I have fun Jersey Shore hosting.
Well, that's like, those are the jobs
stories.
That are the fun ones at MTV because it's like the 6-week gig or a 5-week gig
and
that leads up to
show.
It's one show
and it's live and so you don't have to do
when you're coming up at MTV you want like a job that starts and ends at a good time so you can get on another one or you want one that's like I got on, I remember my first job, first of all I interned on I Love the 90s Part 2,
so VH1
yeah. I was at 1633, I worked at VH1, then I went to Celebrity Diet Secrets was my first PA job, transcribing interviews with Moby, Mel C, and some soap opera. So
they really dug deep on Celebrity Diet Secrets.
For one-off episode. Then I did Top 20 Music Videos of 2004, which was like a standard VH1
Not
gig.
Not bad. Jim Shearer?
What?
Who was the host?
Jim Shearer, I forget Allison who Becker. Arquette.
David?
No, the
Patricia?
Woman. Patricia.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a good get for VH1.
Yeah, it was really cool. Great producer on that job, this woman, Holly. And then I was trying to get hired at Best Week Ever because Best Week Ever didn't rap, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it was weekly.
Yeah.
It was hard. It was the most comedy thing VH1 was doing, and I was like doing UCB classes, was in the comedy. So I finally got hired on that, and then I was a PA on that for like a year. And meanwhile, like people I'm taking improv classes for are like Paul Scheer is my improv teacher, and he's coming in. I got put on a Harold team while I was, I got the call at my work
there
number.
There was always that weird, I'm a PA on this show, but I also do comedy. And then like there would be those producers that look down on you.
I swear to God.
Like, this guy pitching himself.
I hold such a grudge to about 4 or 5 high-level producers from Best Week Ever. Because I interviewed to be a writer on the show. Like, I wrote a packet up, and I sat down with Ann Cohen, who is one of these like high-level writing executives there. And she's like, well, why do you want to be a writer? I was like, well, I like doing comedy. I like working on this show. And I think writing will be more fun than being a PA. And she's like, with that attitude, you'll never be a writer.
Wow.
I was like, okay. And then there was a couple
of fucking gatekeepers, man.
I know. And in hindsight, now that I know more about the business, it's all just survival. It's like, oh, if I bring in this funny person, I could be gone. So it is like a culture, and this is not a knock against you. This is more specific to my experience, but like, it is a culture of like, get in there and shut the door behind you. And like, don't let any fucking young talent pop up. You know, that's why there's like 5 50-year-old people writing on Best Week Ever for a show that's being watched by 17-year-olds.
What always drove me crazy, like in hindsight, what drove me crazy is they never knew what they had, because look at the people who came through Best Week Ever. They're all fucking leading Hollywood. Kumail, Paul Scheer, Rob Hubel, like all of them came through and they didn't keep one of them.
I have a friend
Collins.
Yeah. I have a friend, Paul F. Tompkins is the only one they kept, and they still only kept him for like a year.
I contend to this day, if they never touched Best Week Ever and let it stay in its original form with the voiceover being the star and just cycle in comedians,
it would still be on.
It would still be on.
Yes. But I mean, so many shows like Guy Code that we both worked on was a descendant of Best Week Ever, which was a descendant of I Love the 80s, which was sort of the one that really brought it back.
VH1 started the talking head thing, and then,
everyone.
Ryan Ling took it to a different place.
Yeah, exactly. And more and more people will continue. But my friend Bob Castrone, who's been a guest on this podcast and has his own HeadGum podcast, Throwback Podcast, he talks about, like, he was bringing in talent for Comedy Central, for VH1 to check out, and they were passing on people, and the people that they were passing on were like Aziz Ansari.
Oh my
God. Know what I mean? Like, they were just passing on people who are absolute mega stars.
Yeah, and it still happens to this day throughout all of the channels.
Yeah.
They just never have the wherewithal to like figure out what to do with a certain piece of talent, or like lock them to like a, I don't know, some kind of good deal that the person would want to stay under.
Like fucking Geico, it's a great example. me, Schultz, Damian Lemon, and Chris DeStefano, and Jordan Carlos, and I mean
Pete Davidson,
and Pete Davidson, and there's like eight, and they're some of the women from Girl Code too. These are all people who were killing it for them, and then all went off and got their own individual show. Yeah. It feels like, fucking Comedy Central with John Oliver, and you know, yeah. like shit. Whoops. wait. Samantha Bee. Oh no, damn it.
Well,
you know,
it's like just it's just another lesson in, and it's a lesson in. Nobody knows what they're doing.
Right. Well, someone one time said MTV is interesting. It's 50-year-olds telling 40-year-olds what 30-year-olds to hire to show to 20-year-olds.
Right.
Like it's like
pretty much.
Yeah. Because I feel old there when I'm like a talent. And then you like the people who are telling you what's good and what's not good are 20 years older than me or 10 years older than me. And I'm like, I feel out of touch. There's no way you're in touch, you know?
Yeah. Well, I remember doing the first, like right after the first season of Jersey Shore, the whole cast hosted MTV New Year's and I wrote the show, right? And when the ball dropped and we like partied in the studio, they all as a collective had an engagement at a club later that like a 1 a.m. they show up like club
right
appearance.
They get paid as a X collective. Amount of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, like 10K yeah. split between bar, all eight, yeah. six of them, whatever.
Yeah.
The next year they hosted again. I wrote the show and the ball dropped and each individual cast member had their own club appearance that they had, except for Sammy and Ronnie, who they were a tandem. Yeah. But it just was that like progression, like from one year.
Yeah,
to
you
the
can,
next.
And you can like clock it. I'm just like,
yeah, and they were just like by one almost 1 year in, they like their MTV money was like spending cash.
Right. Well, they were yeah, they
and
were,
it was everything else.
Yeah, they were making it
and
all
that's
from,
really
yeah.
you know that's a microcosm of like everything. Like, right. All these
it's
dudes.
Like all the people who made money at on Guy Code and Girl Code didn't make it on the show. They made it touring.
Yeah.
Because people got to know who they were.
Then you have a credit that you know.
Yeah,
people
and people know.
Know
you, and they're like, oh, I'm gonna go see you at fucking Haha's in Indianapolis.
But whatever. Then the counter is just like, yeah, well, MTV's whole thing is they're an incubator. They're the launching pad.
Yeah.
And they just continue to do it.
They're not trying to keep talent for a decade, and they're not trying to spend any money.
Yeah.
And those two things go side by side, where it's
well,
like,
look,
in year four is when you can ask for more money. So they go, let's just keep them around for 3 years.
Yeah.
but there, it's also the reason they can do that is because so many people want to work there.
Yeah.
And it's including myself.
Like, I remember, you know, you walk into 1515, there's the big escalators, and, you know, you just think you're the coolest fucking person. Like, if you're 23, 24, and you get that MTV ID,
yeah,
and you're going up those escalators, and it's the TRL studio on your right, and there's all these posters on the wall. And
it's something like, it's a network.
You think you're the coolest.
It's a production company, a network, or whatever, that you can tell your aunt, your mom, your niece, or whoever,
yeah,
and they
know.
All know what
it's
you're talking.
It's not like, hey, I got a job at Vice, and my mom's like, what?
Yeah.
What, I'm now, Miami
at,
Vice?
I'm working at Atlas Media. No, they make some of the best shows
yeah,
you've ever watched.
Know.
It's like, yeah, they don't care, yeah.
But, yeah, so it's the cool, also, it's the biggest shop in town, in New York.
Right, it's, yeah.
Like, unless you're, like, I was an NBC page, but didn't get hired into any job at NBC. So then I was just, like, thrown out into the world right. with, like, what do I do? And unless you go the production company route.
Yeah. You either work at 30 Rock or 1515.
Exactly.
Those are your two buildings to choose from.
Or you go into news and you're, you know, there's, yeah. like, those. But, like, really, if you want to do what we all do, it's 30 Rock or 1515.
Right. And 1515, even more specifically, because it's like they're not making like narrative television all the time. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
it's a little
it's all
over
it's
the place.
All. It's all alternative.
Right.
So, and also under that roof, you have, I mean, there's multiple buildings, but it's Spike, it's MTV,
it's
MTV2, it's
Comedy
VH1.
Central, arguably. Sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nickelodeon.
Yeah. And that's like, and what was cool, you're like, go. They get you. They know if you intern at MTV, you don't get paid. You don't even work that hard, but you fucking get free soda in the lot. You know, you go out yeah. for drinks with like
it's
the producers.
The best life.
It was college for me again. And I needed another like yeah. 4 years. I needed like another 3 years.
I had the NBC page program, which was like graduate school. We
right.
were like, you know, all right out of college, like hooking up, and we had like lockers in like a locker room, and we all drank and gave tours drunk. And then to go from that to eventually being in the MTV system, it was like another chunk of college
behavior.
It's
arrested development. Like, you're just like 23 years old. Everyone you're working with is like very bright people who are doing a very dumb job, for lack of a, like, at least starting out as a PA. Yeah. It's like, these people are all wannabe documentary filmmakers, Columbia grads, people from here, you know, just smart, funny people, or like very talented. And we're all just doing the most basic, like, listening to interviews and transcribe. We're just transcribing interviews or logging tapes. And we're all very smart and 22 years old. And we're fucking able to do our job on almost zero sleep with like no, like there's no real responsibility.
My job out of the Page program, one of, was a, I was a PA on in post-production for Crank Yankers, and I was literally, all I did was pick up Cube Truck in the morning, pick up puppets, drop off puppets, return Cube Truck. But like, I had a blast.
Right.
I was like adjacent to the puppets that were making the prank calls.
Right, right. It and it's like cool. And when you tell people I work on Crank Anchors, people know what that means.
Yeah,
and
not
like,
my mom, but yeah, other exactly, people but knew what it is.
Some people do. And then it was just a fucking wild, fun time.
So
and
then who put you on camera first?
Well, Kevin Marr, who was a writer at who was a writer on
Bill Maher's younger brother.
Bill Maher's younger brother, way conservative. he was a writer on Best Week Ever, and he put me on camera in some bits, like playing Peter Jackson, accepting an award, or stuff that fit for me. And then he was like, I even auditioned to be talent on the show, and they just didn't even give me a fair chance. Right. Like, they like were talking like we're not paying attention to my video or whatever. I'm like, that's fine. That's
yeah. Because they see you one way. Oh, he's the PA.
Right. And my friend Kevin Marr, the same guy, was like, I think you should leave this job. I'm like, I want to do comedy. What should I do? He's like, I think you should leave this job. You have no wife. You live in a shitty apartment. Yeah. You can go off unemployment for 6 months. And if you're a MTV PA, unemployment is like $40 less
a week.
It
was like comparable.
Yeah. And it's like, wait a minute. I could take a $40 a week pay cut and not work at all?
That's like the hardest decision though to make though, when you, because you still have that sense of responsibility, like, well, it's a job. Like, I should probably take the job over unemployment.
Right. And like to try to explain that to your parents. You're like, no, don't worry. I'm going to collect unemployment and still live in New York City.
I always had such guilt about collecting unemployment.
Me too. But someone broke it down that was like, you pay for it.
I know. But yeah. It never worked on me. I always felt so terrible. I felt like such a shit.
I did it. I took it. I did 6 months.
I did it.
Yeah.
Believe me,
I
did it.
I took 6 months of unemployment. Also a writer on the show, mutual friend and future guest of High and Mighty, Chris DeLuca, who was a writer on Best Week Ever, he said, I'm leaving this job to be the head writer of the Spike TV Video Game Awards. I think you're really funny. We also have like this weird kinship. Now we're like friends for over a decade and we realize what our kinship is and stuff like that. But he was like, I like you. I think you're funny. These people are never going to give you a chance. Come, it's a 6 or 7 week writing job.
Yeah.
And that was my step out of like, because I was just trying to get the Best Week Ever to have a regular job, because like my parents could not believe, like, what do you mean it's only 10 weeks work?
Yeah, they don't get it.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know.
Freelance.
That's just how it is.
Hashtag freelance.
Yeah, they're like, what do you mean no paid days off? What do you mean no health insurance? Yeah. What do you mean no anything? No anything, no
just
benefits.
Craft service.
Yeah. Just free Barks root beer in the break room.
Soda fountain.
And he was like, and I was like, fuck. And then I was like, all right, I'm doing it. And I left Best Week Ever. I also had like some issues with Best Week Ever. Like, I was passed over for promotion with people who started before me, got bumped up. I started after me, got bumped up to APs.
Frangela got the PA job instead of you.
Frangela. I wish. Good friends of mine were just passing me. And I was like, oh, is there a reason? And they were like, well, you know, your kind of attitude. Because I had like stood up to the EP Fred Graver at one point and kind of yelled at him in a big meeting, because I didn't like him. He was one of those people who
I heard he threw a phone through the like 16th floor window, and that's what ended up getting him
the first time around. I think when he was the president, he had to like then leave or something.
But I wanted to say about DeLuca, that's really the first time I came in contact with you in a writer's room, because I was working for Spike as a as like a head writer for the channel.
Oh, like you and Stein, right?
Yeah, I was like in that whole mix. And yeah. then I kept saying, I want to work on the award shows. I want to work on the award shows. And it was always this disconnect. But they put me in a room for like a day or two. And it was like you and Dominic and,
right.
and DeLuca.
Kurt Metzger and DeLuca, yeah.
Kurt Metzger, who was like never there because he was outside smoking cigarettes. and Amanda Melson.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And that was the first time I came in contact with you, which was interesting for me because I worked with Gino Tomac.
Yes.
On WebJunk, which was one of my first writing jobs, and it was an amazing one because
that was at VH1.
I got to write for Patrice O'Neill,
which is amazing.
Which we can talk about. But I always was like trying to make Gino laugh, and Gino was like, "You're funny, but you know who's fucking funny is John Gabris. You got to meet this guy, John."
Gino has always loved me, and I can't tell if like he wants to.
He kept
fuck me, kill me, or hire me is like I could never tell which one of those three.
He always kept saying like this guy John Gabris, I'm telling you, and you know until you meet the person that is being told to you,
you
is
hate
funny,
them.
You're like, ah, oh, fuck that guy. There's no way he's funny. Oh, another UCB guy, fuck him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like little bit see you in that writer's room, but it wasn't until Guy Code Honors in San Diego where yeah. like we smoked weed and like
at the fucking baseball
we like
stadium,
put
like
on
Petco
a live
Park
show and- with like no rehearsal that we were like I was like ah oh, this guy's yeah. the best. Yeah, so that's like my whole quick
right. What was were you one of the, you. Was it like you Stein and Luke Simmons possibly were like
so
the in-house
Luke,
Spike guys
Luke Simmons, Chris Carlson, and Stein were
Chris Carlson. That's yeah. the other dude.
So they were promo writers. I was in what was called day parts, which we were writing mini TV shows like Dinner and a Movie, like wraparound shows.
Yeah,
like I came from linear TV. They right. were promo guys,
right?
And I was creating what were called interstitials, like
right.
little pop up shows.
Yeah.
So I created like a bowling show called Spare Time with the host was Jen Sturger, who was the chick that Brett Favre sent his dick to.
Wow.
turns out she bowled at Florida State, which is why we hired her.
Also, that's awesome.
Also her boobs. but like she
had it all. Bowling, so breasts, yeah. Brett Favre's dick on her iPhone.
Number four's dick. And I was like a staff writer. And I just kept begging to be on these award shows because Spike had these three tent poles.
Right.
And
they and were
they
like...
they would never do it.
They, right. Like, and they were Casey like... they were yeah. allegedly comedy front. So it's yeah. like, I want to work on that. That's more
and then,
comedy.
And like, the second one, I did like a day in the writer's room. But then you were like on stage doing bits. And I was like, man, this guy...
That was one where I was doing shit for Jack Black.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I was doing bits with him.
So then I was like, oh, this guy's.
Oh God! DeLuca was just here last night. My wife and I made pizza for him and his family.
I love it. Shout out to Chris DeLuca, one of my favorites.
Yeah, guest on. Sorry, I've been so busy. Future guest on. Hi, Mike. We were just talking. It's like he fucking. It takes one person to just say like. You're good. I like you. And then DeLuca and I worked together for like 3 years straight
yeah.
after that.
You were in his Rat Pack.
I was in his little rat. And like he got me hired at this company called Worldwide Biggies where we made videos and like video sketches and shit. But then I also got him hired on to bring it back to MTV when I was hosting the MTV show The Substitute.
Yes.
He was my writer. They were like, well, we can probably hire a writer for you. Yeah. And I was like, hell yeah, I know exactly
what
who
was
I
it,
want.
One season?
Two.
Two seasons.
And it was
great.
And it was like my first real money job.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
I've heard you talk about it before. And you were in Real Schools.
Yeah, the first season was Real Schools, which was
you're
crazy.
Like that Tony Danza thing where he goes back. And
yeah, yeah. It made no sense. Second season we did like in a studio under the auspices that it looked like a classroom. And the right. kids kind of knew they were going to be on a game show.
That was in like the Silent Library era of
yes.
like...
ambush type game show.
Ambush reality prank.
Right. And kind of like pitting friends against each other was like
all
and Substitute scratched. It was Cash Cab in a high school classroom. And I guess when they focus grouped it, they're like, people really like it, but no one gives a shit if it's an ambush because they all think it's fake. Now kids are so hip to reality TV.
Yeah.
They're just like, it doesn't matter. We think it's fake anyway. And so they were like, oh, let's shoot it in
you're
a studio.
You're wearing camera glasses, aren't you?
Yeah. They shot it in a studio in like half the amount of time it takes.
And probably half the money.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And the only cool thing about that, the coolest thing about that job is something that has never happened to me since. But like, you know, it's like a strip thing. So you get paid for 5 episodes, but you shoot 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
So you get paid for 5 weeks, which is decent, still decent money. And then
so you
season
didn't get,
two
you
was
didn't get per ep. You got like a weekly,
yeah, like a stripped
chunk.
Out thing. Yeah. Right. So and so it was like per four eps is really what the price was. So right. It was like. It was still good because it was still
and then they rerun in fucking perpetuity.
Yeah, with no residuals, whatsoever. But the cool thing was for season two, my contract said my minimum pickup was for 36 episodes and instead of 20. But they didn't want to throw the budget into 36, so they shot 20 again. But I got paid for 36. Yeah. So I got like double time. And yeah. I was like, this is the best business in the world. And then I almost haven't worked since.
Right. Well, I just remember like four seasons into Boiling Points when like the cast members were like making really fun money.
Yeah.
I would never say they were making great money, but like John, you know, people, they were making like fun money, like money where like you could go out and...
Like money and, where you can do things. Yeah. Yeah. And my friend Streeter Seidel, now a writer on SNL, but used to have a show called Pranked on MTV with Amir.
Yeah.
And we were friends back then. He was like, I want to write an article for like New York Magazine that's like, these are the other jobs that MTV talent has, because like MTV just right. doesn't pay enough that where it's like even like the substitute rapped and I was like trying to get bartending jobs.
I forget who said it. I think it was a Jersey Shore cast member. No, it was The Miz. Sorry, from The Real
World. Yeah.
He said, you'll never get rich by being on an MTV show, but you'll get known.
Right. And that's just as much, just as important of a commodity.
Yeah.
In a way. Shit, dude. The Miz. So, oh, God. I love. Oh, that. I just started going to the gym again. I told you I'd bring it up.
By the way, Miz, 12 years in the WWE, killing it.
I know. And you thought it was just like this corny ass bit he was doing when he was on.
Yeah. But that's when I left Viacom. I did a million writing jobs, and then I got WWE.
Right, and you did that for like a year and a half?
I did that for a year.
Oh, yeah.
And then got fired.
Isn't that legendarily like as long as anyone lasts? Like everyone just does
There's
a year?
There's like three people that have lasted a very long time, and then they chew up writers and spit them out. Like every New York production person has been contacted at one time or another from WWE.
Because it's East Coast, it's Connecticut, which is weird, yeah. but... They pay,
but it was a thrill for me because
you were a big wrestling.
I was a wrestling fan since I'm like going on my 30th year as a wrestling fan, and so it was like a thrill. And then post that eight, 9 months, it's become like a cottage industry for me because I do wrestling podcasts. Like I'm doing The Ringer tomorrow,
right?
And like you're. Because you were behind, you saw Oz, you become this like expert. So right. I'm like on radio shows. Like
I've seen you responding to some people.
I'm on this
Twitter.
Memphis radio station every Saturday before a pay-per-view as like the guy who handicaps pay-per-views.
That's so fun.
So you just become this like expert in residence.
Let's hear, what was it like in that writer's room? Oh, I know goodness. We're supposed to be talking about MTV Networks.
No,
but
we'll get
fun.
Back to the writers.
Oh, real quick, what I meant to say was at the gym, I saw Mark from Road Rules 1 and all the challenges.
Well, a Jensen Karp's joke is always like, there's one bar in LA where they all hang out. And he's like, I know that bar. Like, he doesn't know the bar, but he's like, I know what that bar
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you would guess. You're like, oh, shit, yeah.
All the Road Rules people, all the Bachelor, Bachelor Universe people, and all the Real World people all hang out.
Yeah, I think I saw Coral here yesterday. Yeah.
Coral, that's who Miz, isn't that who Miz? Like had called the N-word and then he got in trouble and
yeah I think so.
His career almost died before it started.
I know, and now he's like found a whole second life. But let's hear it.
WWE was the dream job that was also a fucking nightmare. It's what everybody says, it was shark infested waters. I had no business having that job at 25. I had no confidence or producing skills at 25 because I had just come off writing jobs. If I got the job now, I'd crush it.
Right, but wouldn't take it, would you?
No, not married.
No.
I'd have the confidence to go up to the Big Show, who's a legit 7'4", 495, and be like, here's what I need you to do. Right. Whereas as a mealy-mouthed 25-year-old who thought I was funny, those dudes fucking shit on me.
Right, of course.
And then you add in Miss Vince McMahon and how intimidating he was, and like he yelled at me like an inch from my face. God damn it, that... Double take shit went out in the goddamn 80s. Go shoot it again. Like spittle from his mouth hitting you.
From like, some like double take bit you did in a promo. You had someone
do
it.
Yeah, like one of the wrestlers did like a Scooby-Doo like.
Yeah.
and it made air. In the house, because the non-live show was SmackDown, which I wrote on.
Oh.
So promos and vignettes you produced backstage would air to the house, and then Vince would watch them and say, either give the thumbs up, or in your headphones, you'd hear, go see Vince, which was like Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, go see Vince means you're going to have to reshoot that before the
night. Damn it.
That's so funny. Here's something I heard. Tell me if this is a true, or if it's just a myth, that like once a week there's like a 9-hour meeting with Vince at WWE.
Well, semi-true. Depending on what show you, again, this is 10 years ago. Things have changed.
Yeah.
But when I was there, you'd come back from TV Tuesday night, and then Wednesday the Raw team would be in there, and they'd have their marathon meeting with Vince where you'd be in at 10, and Vince wouldn't show up till like 2, 3 o'clock. And then you'd have to go through your whole meeting. And then the next day would be SmackDown. And we would do the same deal. And then technically you were supposed to have like Friday off. But like there was always a phone call. There was always like shit to do.
Yeah.
And then Saturday again, you were supposed to have it off. But you'd have these epically long conference calls where like everything about every wrestler, about every storyline would be nitpicked to death with like Stephanie on the phone. And it was just crazy. You had no life.
Was Triple H working? Not yet.
Like, yeah. He was still an active worker.
Oh, cool.
But it was a blast. Like, I got, like, my first road, like, being on the road the first time, I, like, was in a limo driving from, like, Topeka to Wichita with Dusty Rhodes, who was, like, my favorite, the American Dream. Ooh,
that's so cool.
Wait, like, it was amazing. Who, baby?
Is there any like writing lessons or like, I love hearing like super show specific advice. Like, oh, well,
so the thing there was like, you couldn't pitch. There was so much politics that you couldn't just outwardly pitch something and own it. You had to qualify everything with, okay, this isn't the idea. Maybe, okay, here's the thing. I have like a nugget. Like, I'm going to throw it out there. You guys make it something. This isn't the idea at all. Like, you could never take any credit because the wrestlers in the room, the old retired wrestlers, would be like, this motherfucker going into business for himself. Who's he fucking think he is? Like Michael P.S. Hayes, you know? Like, when when I got renewed on my first 13 weeks, he called me into his office and he's like, I want you to know we're renewing you. So I was like, oh man, that's amazing. He's like, but it's not like I'm running down to HR telling him we need to keep this kid. And I was like, thanks. Like, just
he's like,
real
renewing
mindful.
You, but you don't feel
like
please
you're not
don't be
doing
comfortable
a good job,
here.
But like we still need you.
I can't afford to have you enjoy your time here. So.
Complete mind fuckery. But like the positives like evened out the negatives because like you're on the road, like Dusty Rhodes.
Did you have
and
to
Paul
do a lot
Heyman
of
and,
yeah, did you go on a lot of road gigs? Or were you
at that time every writer we were all on the road. Like now they have a home team and an away team, like people who just work in the office and send ideas, and then the writers with producing skills sort of go off and do like
and
Matt
they're,
McCarthy
they're at all the film.
They're at all the you know, Sunday pay per view, Monday TV, Tuesday TV, whatever. When I was there, we all did everything. And so again, that's why I say I wasn't equipped for the job because, sure, I could be in a writer's room and write bits and write storylines and promos. But once I got to TV and I had to like produce Booker T and Charmel, like I had no I had no confidence to tell Booker T, who's like dressed up as a king because he was King Booker, like what I needed from him.
Right, right, right.
But then then I got to see like Ric Flair like blade his forehead in front of me and like blood,
oh,
like bleed, you know.
Woo! He's my favorite.
Let's hope he gets healthy.
Yeah, he's doing better though, right?
Shout out to Ric Flair, my favorite of all time. Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, my top two.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm a Hulk. I'm a Hulk Ultimate Warrior, which probably puts me at exactly 1 or 2 years younger than you.
Yeah,
right.
Like, yeah. Well, I was a huge Hulk.
Or you were into wrestling before me.
I was a huge Hulk guy. Yeah. Ultimate Warrior came at a time where I was like, fuck that WWF stuff. I love all, you know, because the NWA, you know, like the Southern wrestling just felt real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, these guys are really fucking killing each other with belt buckles and cowboy boots.
Yeah. Guys, the SiriusXM free listening event is right now. Look, August 23rd through September 5th, all you need is an inactive SiriusXM radio, and you are getting over 100 free channels for 2 weeks. 100 amazing channels. The newest one is the Beatles channel. Have you heard of this band called the Beatles? I think they're from like England or something. I don't know much about them, but people seem to really like them. So much so that they get their own SiriusXM channel. Recommend checking out. I don't know about you, but we were We're a Howard House, an Opie and Anthony House. We listen to all that. But my thing, and you've heard me talk about this before, is Fly. My Sirius goes back and forth between four stations, and I'll just tell you what they all are right now. Hip Hop Nation. I love Torre, my tour guide, and Nina Nine, Target Practice. Two of my favorite Sirius shows there. I also listen to Fly, which is 90s hip hop and R&B, and just the music I used to grind on girls to. So it's nice to hear that again. Backspin is all the hip hop that's from when I was too young, but I still am so excited to hear it. Anytime I could listen to Eric B and Rakim, I'm ready to pop into that. And then I love First Wave, and I don't fully understand what the demographics are of First Wave, but it's kind of like new wave-ish, 80s-esque, you know, that kind of stuff, and I love it. So those are my four main channels, but I'm telling you guys, Fly is new and it's dope, and I guess these guys, the Beatles, are also doing stuff. So go to the URL, SiriusXM.com/HeadGum to learn more. Just one last time, that is www.SiriusXM.com/HeadGum. You get two free weeks. Listen to whatever the heck you guys want. Bye.
So then that ended. I got let go, like whatever, 8-9 weeks in. And then within a week, I was on TRL.
So you got 13 weeks, and then another 8 or so, and then got fired?
Yeah. I got like 2 13-weeks or somewhere in that second 13 weeks.
Yeah. And then you went to TRL.
Like within a week, I got TRL. Like a writer left, and I got hired. And that was where I learned to produce.
With Carson?
No, it was Damian Fahey. Shout out to Damian Fahey. And Vanessa Manillo, now Vanessa Lachey, which cut to like 6 years later, I produced Nick Lachey on Big Morning Buzz. So I worked for the couple. But so I did TRL like sort of during the dog days. But that's where I learned to produce, because we wrote the script and then had to go on the floor during the shoot. And we were holding cue cards.
Yeah, yeah.
And like we're ripping off words and writing it with Sharpie. Like I remember being on the floor in the middle of shooting live TRL and the news that Anna Nicole Smith died. And for some reason that was huge. That was like a big fucking deal.
I remember that
like
too, because people,
pre-internet, like pre-Twitter, all that stuff. So that us breaking that news was a big deal.
Yeah.
And we were like frantically scribbling on the cards, like these like heartfelt tributes. And I was like on this, like it was really crash course on producing live TV, because like, you're on the floor in the moment, you got to do it. You're like waving down Damien, like, look at this card.
Love Damien. What a great career he's like, what an interesting career. Now he's like a longtime Family Guy writer, but like
again, shout out to Twitter, man.
Yeah, right. He got, because he
like,
crushed
wait
on
a
Twitter.
Second, this like amazingly good looking guy with like,
yeah, who, like who's a strong host, he just like retaught comedy. The world that he was a comedian.
It's like,
yeah,
you know, when you hear like Blake Griffin's like the funniest dude in real life, but he's also like 6'8", dunking on fools on the
right.
Clippers.
Right. Well, it's like when it was revealed that Arnold Schwarzenegger can carry comedy. You know what I mean? You're like, holy shit, this guy looks like this.
For some
like
reason, we're always really surprised, but Damien's just like this wunderkind.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's so fucking awesome.
But we had a blast. Like, we're friends to this day because of those times. Because
like, that's like peak MTV, because you're working 5 days a week, putting out a
that
show
was
every
a great
day.
Because
putting out a show every day.
You're in the studio and there's like high school senior, college freshman girls every day,
super high energy,
and they
everyone
think you're cool,
yeah,
because you have like a headset on,
right,
and like you're going to Scruffy Duffy's on 8th Avenue every day after work.
Great wings.
Yeah, sadly it's like an apartment building now, but
of course
those were like great times.
Did you ever do Rudy's after 15:15?
Yeah, of course, with the free hot dogs.
Free hot dogs. Imagine going to a bar that's so trashy. It has $8 pitchers, but then one up you with free hot dogs.
When you're working at MTV, man,
you need that.
All of that.
Oh, here's a crazy MTV fact. It used to be if you worked after 8, you got dinner paid for by MTV through, I forget what the program was, but there's that program where you can get up to $35 per person or whatever.
Yeah, so you do all whatever data entry really slow, so you're there till 8.
Yep, and then after 9, you got car service home. So sometimes, when I was living at my mom's house on Long Island, my first year working there.
Oh, that's great. I always somehow figured out a way to live in Manhattan.
Oh, smart.
no help from it, like literally just made it work. So never took advantage of cars, but definitely took advantage of meals.
Oh yeah, I mean I would eat, like I would order from like one of those Asian-owned Mexican places, you know, like those Taco Bandidos or whatever, those types of places where the quesadillas are the size of, like, so it's all the same. Like, you, there's like 50 of these places in New York City. I would order $35
worth of barbecue.
Yeah, yeah, because you could get two meals out of it. I would get two meals. I would eat my dinner and then bring it home and then eat that for lunch the next day or dinner the next day because I was not making enough money to stay alive. There, legend has it, after MTV Holiday Party, Jesse Camp Jesse Camp and Dave Holmes fame.
DJ Search.
Can you believe the misfire? Like,
he
talk
was
about
like a meth addict who they hired to be the new DJ.
And Dave Holmes is like a true artistic genius.
Yeah.
And they just went with the other guy because he was wild.
They
and
went
weird.
With like the lead singer of The Cure.
Yeah. And then allegedly, there's like a little MTV legend that he took a car service after a holiday party to Montreal.
Yeah.
Like MTV paid black car service. And then it's like, that would have been $1,500. He just like fucking.
Well, there's the classic Norm Macdonald SNL stories where he would leave the show and instead of taking his car to the party, he'd take it to AC.
Well, that makes sense.
But I have two great take advantage of the things MTV gave you stories. One is, I was driving a cube truck for a gig, and me and my roommate were moving out of our Upper East Side apartment to another Upper East Side apartment, and I called him, and it was a Friday. And they were like, hey, can you return this cube truck? And I was like, sure. When does it need to be back? They're like, well, not till Monday, but we'd love it to go back tonight. And I was like, great. So I called my roommate. I was like, yo, we're moving tonight. Free cube truck. Drove it up to East 90th Street. We, two little Jewish guys, we like moved our beds, our wall units, our TVs, everything into this cube truck. Drove it to the new apartment, unloaded it all, and I went and returned it to CNC Rentals. All on MTV's dime.
That's fucking
awesome. So shout out
to
MTV.
That's
second
fucking
one, John Murray, who you know. He went to Marist, right?
He went to Marist. He was a humorist. And he was a
Stucky Murray, one of my, we're like three best friends.
And he was a second producer together at Best Week Ever for a while, too. Yeah,
he was director on my series Just Now, Vidiots. But literally one of my closest TV friends. And we came up together at Boiling Points. Got promoted together.
And he was Paige. Were you guys a Paige at the same time, too?
Yes.
Yeah. So you were Paige with Stucky,
his
too.
His wife, I started with Julie, his wife, on day one. We were day one Paiges together. Stucky and Murray were older than me.
Oh, cool.
But we did sketch together.
And DeLuca was a Paige, too, right? Wait, were you
I don't know if he was a Paige, but he was way before me. But he was
Next Monday?
Yeah. He was working at Conan before.
He was a Paige before that.
Yeah, all thought DeLuca was a legend because he was like reception at Conan.
Yeah, he was a graphics coordinator at Conan.
I remember not getting reception after being the SNL Paige and thinking my career was over. But yeah, we were in Next Monday. We had like a sketch.
I came and saw a show of Next Monday before I would have even known who you were. When I was in college, a group of us came down to see Murray's professional sketch group.
Legend.
We gotta see. He's in.
But that launched Stucky and Murray.
Right.
Yeah, that Ryan Nagel, who's writing on Marlin right now.
Oh, shit.
A lot of people came out of that. And then I did Hank the Homeless Homosexual. That was like my breakout character. He was like a really he was a gay homeless guy. So he was like, he had like really dirty and dingy nice clothes. And he hung out outside of Starbucks and asked people for their change. But anyway,
it was 2001. It was a different time.
Yeah, so he would ask for change so he could get a mocha frappuccino. Like, really, you know.
That is like.
And there was a song, like, I didn't know what I was doing sketch writing, so I just based it off SNL sketches. So I wrote a song in.
Right.
Did the sketch, and I wrote a song out, just like
Hank the. Yeah. Homeless homosexual.
Murray. Oh, so Murray and I came up together in Boiling Points. Like, we were both PAs. He got promoted to seg producer. I got promoted to writer. We got an office together. And the whole time, because all of our actors, all the cast members were from UCB. And MTV had this tuition reimbursement program, which I don't think exists anymore. And so we got MTV to pay for four levels of UCB improv for us because we wrote in the application, we're writing and producing all UCB talent. We need to learn how to speak their language. And they paid for levels 1 through 4 for us.
I got levels 2, 3, and 4 paid for by MTV. Yeah.
I've never found anybody else who did that. So that's amazing.
I straight up, because I was like, I thought
all
I was going to be.
All the secrets come out.
I thought I was going to be I wanted to be a director originally. So I was like, I'm going to see if I can take a film class on MTV's dime.
They might still have it. I don't know.
The amount of money was weird. Like, I couldn't fully understand. But then when I found out, like, They would do it for UCB classes. I was like, oh, I had done level two already because I did level one summer in between junior and senior year. And I was like, maybe I could see if they'll pay for level three. And I had them pay for sketch level one, too.
It's a lot of money.
Right, yeah, it's $300-something.
That was like our big coup.
That's so awesome, so cool. I didn't even know you guys did that. That's great.
So, I've been all over the place.
We haven't talked about the lodge. Let's talk a little bit about the lodge.
My running joke is always that I want to take over the whole operation. If I could have any job in 1515, it's to take over the lodge because they make so many mistakes.
It could be so cool.
It should be fucking like Google. And it's right. And they make so many mistakes.
Why is it not? Yeah, why is it not like you hear about like
Google? The Condé Nast cafeteria and the YouTube cafeteria. My thing is like,
So the lodge is the
That's the
sixth floor, fifth floor in 1515.
Yeah, seventh floor,
and there's like cafeteria. Yeah,
and
it's like slightly subsidized, right? It's like 10% less.
Yeah, you definitely will, if you eat there every day, you save a bit of money
rather than going
to Virgil's Barbecue.
Right,
but it always annoys me that they have a salad bar. And then one of their specialty lines, 1 week a month, will be salad. So they'll do specialty salad. So that's of like, let's say five stations, now two are salad. Yeah. If you're like me, it's like, I want like a protein and a rice. Like I want a protein and a quinoa.
Starch. Yeah,
you know? It would like drive me crazy because then one line sandwiches. Like I try not to eat bread during the week. Like this is like later on in you know, post 30s. Like I can't eat anything anymore. And so like that drives me crazy. The lines hit each other. Like they remodeled the lodge and made it less
conducive to success,
less productive.
Right.
Like stations are across from each other. So if you're in line, like lines hit each other. It makes no fucking sense. It's awful.
And then it is cool. Like, I remember the first time, because the lodge is in 1515, which is 1515 Broadway, where TRL was filmed, where you think MTV is if you've ever been to
the center of the universe.
Right. 1633 is at 50th and Broadway, and that's where so we didn't have the lodge.
Yeah, there's no lodge.
But every once in a while, it would be like, let's make a, because you really can't even take a lunch at that job too often, only rarely. We ate at Cozy a lot because we had a Cozy in our lobby.
Yeah, that's right there.
With the free bread, I would be hungover. I would just like walk in there and grab like a handful.
I just last week I was in 1633 for the first time since working in that building because a Bleacher Report is now in that building.
Oh, wow.
And cool. I had like a little thing there and I was just like super flashbacks to spending hours in that building.
I do remember though, like early on in my career, going to the lodge from 1633 and being
that's like the power move.
Yeah, and being like, we're making a break for it. Go there, go in, and who do I sit like directly across from while I hammer down my sandwich? Sway.
So I was just gonna say, you always see Sway. Sway's the only
talent that eats the lodge, yeah. And it was just so awesome to be like, oh fuck, that's Sway. That's so cool.
He steals rolls and puts them in his schmata.
Holy shit. This just reminded me of my favorite one of my favorite MTV VH1 stories. So a big thing when I was there was global emails because
you're in the global. Yeah. I'll find you in the global.
Yeah. Search engines were there, but like not that great. And you needed, so you would do like, does anyone know music videos that feature chickens being hatched or
that
whatever?
Dude, Henry Brown. Yeah, Henry Brown.
Downtown Henry Brown.
He would send out the like global request, like, yo, I got two tickets to, you know, Natalie Imbruglia at Webster Hall.
Yeah. And he would also, every time he saw me, because I looked like this dude, Mike Hague, who also went to
Mike Hague. Yeah. He's like a chef now, right?
Yeah, he's a chef in Rhode Island or something.
Unbelievable.
I looked like him. We went to college together. We were both heavyset bearded guys. And then he got me my internship at VH1 and I kind of just followed him there. And he called him Chola from the episode of South Park where J-Lo is on the hand. And it's like, Chola, whatever. And so then he started calling me Chulo. And then he started calling me Chulo. And I was called Chulo for the 5 years that I worked with him. But the global email thing was such a big thing. You would like, people would accidentally do company-wide globals instead of like floor-wide globals. There was like big, and one time, if you remember correctly, you were probably there. You probably got the email. Someone accidentally sent out an email that was like health insurance or something, but it was not BCC'd.
Yeah.
And it was every single MTV, MTVN Mix, MTV Networks, MTV Staff, every single one of those email addresses were all there. So slowly but surely, the biggest reply all bit of all time happens.
Phenomenal.
Huge reply all, and it's we're reading it at our desks in the pit, which was this area where the PA sat. Hysterical laughing.
The peach pit.
People were, we were at the peach pit. We were left the Max to go to the peach pit. We were writing, like, the reply alls were like classic, like, hey guys, there's cake, like, but people were being vague, so it's even funnier. Right. It's like, cake in the pantry, because that would be one global you'd get for like the sixth floor. It'd be like, there's like a ton of leftover bagels from this
every day somewhere in 1515.
Someone's having a
free
birthday
cake sometime at like 4 o'clock.
I worked with a guy, John Michaels, I think was his name, and he had the best, like, MTV
Brett Michaels.
Yeah, it was Brett. Sorry. He had like
mirror
sunglasses, long, greasy hair, and a singlet. No, this guy, John, he one time said, I love working at MTV because I like to eat cake off of coffee filters. It's so true. Because there's never plates. You're just like, grab a coffee. But so this reply all email is going insane. Everyone's doing bits. Anything that you would send in a global is being replied all, and everyone is having a field day with it. A lot of people are saying like unsubscribe, which is not going to work when the email list is like 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Kurt Loder replies all and is like, this is an intrusion of my time, blah, blah, blah. And like, it's like a really intense, like, terse email, and then hits send. And then someone whose name I'll never remember, but replied all, hey guys, Kurt's right. Chill with the reply alls. And then that was a reply all. And everyone just kept going, guys, listen to Kurt. Kurt, and it's keeping Kurt on the email. It was just like the funniest thing. And just to see Kurt Loder, and then you're like, looking through and you're like, oh, where's Serena Alschul's email?
Exactly. That's a way you can steal emails for like job inquiries when you get laid off.
Yeah.
What's sad is I did like a month at Fuse. Remarkably, I never had to work at Fuse except for 1 month with Gino on this Insane Clown Posse TV show.
A lot of people would pop over to Fuse. Had like a weird, because it was like where they hired people who hated MTV.
Fuse was like adjacent, MTV adjacent.
But they were only $10.99, so it was like the most insane place. You would not pay any taxes.
But it was an open office. It was an open floor where everyone was in cubes. And I remember showing up the first day and Kurt Loder was just in a cube amongst like PAs and stuff. And he's like in his 60s. Which he still looks like, you know, Kurt
I did
Loder.
A lot of jobs at Fuse as
and
well.
And I was just like, that just made me really upset.
Yeah, I can understand that. I was
like, he's got his headphones on, like he's trying to write this like brilliant piece of music journalism, and he's like surrounded by like a PA taking lunch orders.
I did a Fuse show called Hoppus on Music a bunch of times as a guest, and John Murray, formerly mentioned, was a producer on it.
They're like still, but they still communicate.
Yeah.
I think John's in Blink 182 now.
Amy Schumer was the co-host.
Yeah.
Talk about people who just like, and she,
again,
I was just like this. I was like, I know your stand up because I follow stand up and I'm from Long Island. So I appreciate, I know who Chuck Schumer is and I know. And that's amazing. Oh shit. And then like a year and a half later, I'm like, oh shit.
Now you're the biggest star.
Yeah. And
now.
I'm like, fuck, I wish I would have stayed in touch with Amy Schumer. Yeah,
I wish there was a reply all with her, you know.
Yeah, I know, for fuck's
sake.
Although here's the thing, here's a little known trick about Hollywood. You could probably guess most celebrities' email addresses.
Yeah. Amy Schumer 1
at gmail.
At gmail.com.
John Hamm at johnham.com.
Ham on rye at excite.com.
What was your favorite, we're coming down the home stretch here, but what was your favorite MTV job you ever held?
Or the best job of all of them. Web Junk was amazing, getting to work 2 years with Patrice O'Neill, who obviously has passed away, and like knowing that I was, had no business getting that job as like a...
Was Greg Wax the producer on that?
Wax is one of my boys.
He's one of an old
Wax
buddy too. That's
guys.
So funny.
But knowing that like I was this like 5'8 white Jewish kid with barely any writing credits, and Patrice like let me pitch jokes to him and like made him laugh. Like that gave me the confidence to walk into any writer's room and with scant credits and be like, well, I just wrote for Patrice O'Neill, so I'm pretty sure.
I remember hearing that Patrice O'Neill had such a great attitude towards Web Junk, where he was like, it's bullshit or whatever. You know, he would like shit on
it, but
work hard and make it funny still.
Yeah, but then at the end, like he saw that somebody got a billboard and then he wanted a billboard. And that like kind of led to like him leaving the show. It was like a whole thing. But my favorite Patrice story is the last time I saw him was outside of 345 Hudson, which is another MTV sort of enclave.
Yeah.
I walk out, I see him. I was like, oh, I was like, we have like a conversation. I was like, oh, Patrice, I was just thinking about you. And I go into some fucking story and I finish the story and he goes, you know what? I never think about you. And he just walked away.
That is,
but that's Patrice's way of being like, yo, man, I'm glad to see you're doing well.
Yeah. It's just a great, like, he will fucking leave you.
Well,
roasted.
Gino Tomac, who we talked about earlier, they got super close.
Yeah, they were buds. He was really upset. I remember I knew I was working with Gino. Gino gave me an IFC job called Lunchbox where I would host like every Friday, like a different person was hosting.
I already love the show because it's called Lunchbox.
It's a great name. It's Lunchbox. It came on at noon on IFC.com and wasn't streaming or anything like that. It would stay up. But on like Mondays, it was politics with this political writer. On Tuesdays, it was film with this film. And on Fridays, it was random. And it was me. Yeah. I hosted Fridays. It was like, have you heard of this weird ass website? Or do you guys know what fucking noodling is? You know?
That's why I always tell people, because people often, you know, younger people in the biz will ask, they'll be like, I'm thinking about moving to LA. And my thing, like, I've never lived here. My thing is, there's more rules out here. There are no fucking rules in New York.
Yeah.
Like, Gino, who you know from your last gig, would be like, yo, you want to do this thing on Fridays? Be like, done.
Yeah. I've told a ton of people, they're like, how'd you get a start in the business? I was like, I would say like my first 10 jobs after working at VH1 and MTV Networks all came from connections I had from working at MTV.
Yeah.
And I think there's like the silver lining to MTV not being a great place to work forever in like a staff position.
Yeah.
Because of that, you get to know you've worked on so many shows. You have so many people that are like, shit, I need a writer. Let's get Goldstein. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
there's so many people that you've worked with that are now disseminated around MTV and broader, where it's just like, how many people that I started with working in production now work at like the most, like, so some of my best week ever people that I shared cubes with, one works for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
One works in Boston in film. They like all like
they're everywhere.
Scatter. And because they're all people who are driven, but it's not necessarily a job you can keep forever. Especially if you switch to writer, that's a different story.
I definitely fell into a rut of my like whatever job I was on would be like winding down and I'd be in the lodge and I'd run into so-and-so and they'd be like, hey, what are you doing? What do you got next? And I'd be like, nothing. And they'd be like, hey, you want to write this Britney Spears clip show? And I'd be like, sure.
Yeah, right.
And like never increase my rate, never, you know, because it was just like friends. And I was just like, I'll work for 6 more weeks, whatever.
Right.
And then...
Well, that's the other thing about MTV too, because there's... and that freelance lifestyle where it's like your rate doesn't matter. Like your rate versus how many weeks the job is like a scale you can do where you're like, I'll take a less rate if you promise me I don't have to look for work for 10 weeks.
Longevity outweighs, you know, you know, I would take a shit rate if I knew it was 6 to 8 weeks because then I was like, all right, well, I got my rent paid for another 2 months.
Right, exactly.
But like, and I, so like I said, I definitely fell into that rut. And then, you know, in the last, I went to Spike for 4 years, came out of that. And then that's sort of where I made the transition from writer to producer and producer to showrunner. And now I have an agent and it's like, now like my agent's like, do not say yes to anything.
Right.
Without talking to me.
And that's, it's a
and
great.
And I love having that. And I'm glad to pay the 10% to that person. Cause again, I just the way I am, I would shake anybody's hand and say, sure, I'll do 8 months.
I mean, that's the problem. I think that, like, I always say, like, I can't believe I'm saying no to any work. You know what I mean? But at some point in your career, you have to start saying, like,
I'm
actually
just now
no.
turning stuff down. And it's like, I easily would have taken that job and had a blast doing it.
Right. It's like that weird thing where it's like, it so feels so awful to say no to something because then, like,
who the fuck am I to say no?
Right. I deserve whatever I can get.
But, and then the other answer to best gig is, you know, my last one, my first show running, my first series as a showrunner is called Vidiots, which is now on MTV2. It's through Bird Brain, Ryan Ling, Guy Code Universe. But it was great because, as you know, you get to hire your friends. And I worked with John Murray, John Friedman, Matt Kroll.
Love all these
Pat
guys.
Pat Driscoll, who
I know personally.
Raya Backer, like all these amazing people. And like, we're just in an office all day watching music videos, writing jokes, like, and then the cast, come on, like Derek Gaines, Monroe Martin, Andrew Schultz, Akash Singh, Annie Letterman, Carly Aquilino,
the
Murderers Fucking Row.
Yeah. It's
and so we had a blast for 8 months.
Right.
I'm fucking blessed. It was the most fun I've ever had on a gig.
Right. And it's one part being higher up in the power, and then another part being like, these are all people I've worked with previously, proven that we get along and that they are good, and I'm confident.
And Bird Brain's got their shit down. Like, right. They have great people.
Ryan's
that, like,
a great guy to work
they
for.
They protect, you know, as a showrunner, they protected me so much with, like, production management was, like, solid. Everything post was so fucking solid. Like, all I had to really worry
about
was,
shout out to
like,
Katie Schwartz,
everybody. I just had to, and, like, Dan Kouvelakis. Like, I just had to worry about creative and, like, the edit and, like, putting the shows together and making sure the cast was happy and the producers were happy. And it was so much fun. Like, it's like things are coming up and I'm just, like, waiting for hopefully a second season, because I was like, I'll gladly take another season of videos just because it was so much fun.
Yeah, so let's take, this seems like a natural transition to plugs. Let's, people should check out Vidiots now that it's on MTV.
Just find MTV2? It on MTV2. It's starting to marathon. So it's like the other night it was 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. They played like four episodes.
Slap it on your DVR.
But
check
it's
out
Human
Vidiots.
Beavis and Butthead. Like, there's no reason this show shouldn't be on TV. It's your favorite comedians watching newish and like classic music videos, like fucking Rick Astley, and like
it's in between two famous VH1 shows. It's Best Week Ever meets Pop Up Video, which is like all you can ask
it's
for.
So it was so much fun. So
like Pop Up Video was so cool when it came out, and how much cooler it would be to have Annie Letterman read the jokes rather than you reading them as written. Yeah.
And so check out Vidiots. Find it in your DVR. Set a season pass, and you'll just find it. And it's a really really fun show.
And if this New York production world or New York comedy people or unheard of New York talents that appeals to you at all, I highly recommend checking out yours and Goldidge's podcast.
Sorry, I've been so busy. Yeah. You can find us in iTunes. We're into the Showbiz Studios family. And we talk to really busy people about what they're busy doing, or not so busy people about what they're like lying about being busy with. Because like our whole thing was, in New York, and I'm sure it happens in LA, you like run into somebody like, yeah, let's get beers next Thursday. And then inevitably next Thursday comes, you're like, who do I have drinks with? Oh, fuck, no way. Like, and then you're like, sorry, man, I'm too busy.
Right.
So we're like trying to get to the bottom of like what we're actually busy with.
Yeah.
But we've had like, we just had Mark Webb on, who directed Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 2, 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
Like only living boy in New York right now. We've had like, from like Adam Wade
to Michelle Collins.
Adam Wade. We had Neil Brennan.
Real quick, Adam Wade, one of the funniest dudes ever, was the writer's assistant on Spike TV Video Game Awards. Dude was not a good writer's assistant. Ditka, you know.
Yeah, but now Wade is like a storytelling superstar. He's like the face of the Magnet Theater. He's
has been a storytelling superstar, but he can't handle like collating documents.
I know. He's paying rent by teaching storytelling. Like, it's amazing.
It's awesome.
So like Neil Brennan, we had Pat Kiernan from New York One, who if you've ever lived in New York, he does In the Papers.
Also, I was on a game show called Studio 7 that Pat Kiernan was the he read the questions on.
That's how we booked him, because Goldidge worked on World Series of Pop Culture with him, a VH1 show.
Oh, so check out the Goldidge episode of this podcast, because we talk about game shows and there's a lot of MTV talk in there.
So sorry I've been so busy. That's why we're in LA. We're doing a day of recording, so you're going to be a guest.
I can't wait.
We have some awesome guests lined up. So that's that. And then this is totally random, but I wrote this super ridiculous article for ESPN about the Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight. I've been unemployed, so I had the time. And they asked me to book McGregor versus Mayweather like WWE would, because again, like, I have this cachet as a former WWE writer. So I basically wrote like 3,000 words on a month's worth of Monday Night Raw storyline for Conor
Leading
McGregor.
That's awesome.
So it's a complete fiction. It's basically a writing sample for the WWE, like what your writing sample is, but I did it for Mayweather and McGregor, but I integrated like The Miz in it, and Vince and Stephanie and Triple H. And
all right, well, we'll tweet that really out too, because this episode will come out this Thursday.
Yeah, if you go to my Twitter at @angegold, @angegold, it's pinned to my profile.
Yeah, so tweeted us some of your favorite MTV shows. If you formerly worked at MTV Networks and know and want to play Jewish geography with who worked with
production
who
geography,
tweet at A-N-G-E-G-O-L-D. And me at John Gimmish.
And tweet us your favorite meals at the lodge. Like, did you like the chicken salad?
Big thing me and my buddy Brian Hacken would do was...
I know Brian Hacken.
Yeah, we had it called 5 p.m. dumplings. And there was a, you know, those pay per pound hot buffets?
Yeah.
It after five or after four, whatever,
like Cranberry across the street.
Yeah, it would bump down $1 a pound.
Wow.
After four, because it's been sitting out all day. So we would just go and get what we called 5 p.m. dumplings. They were like fucking apples. They were like rock hard and like and dried out. Yeah. But we would go and be like $6 for like 20 of them.
Yeah, like the dumpling wrapper sort of coagulates.
Yep, exactly.
Did you ever go to the Cuban place in Times Square? Margon.
Fuck, dude.
That's the hidden gem of hidden gems. If you ever have to work in Times Square, find Margon.
Stucky took me there like a year ago, and I've gone back. I made Ling meet me there for lunch. Anytime I'm chicken, in LA, in New York, yeah.
And then the secret, and then they had like the dope Cuban sandwich, and then in the back they have a grill and they make this steak sandwich that's incredible.
The Cuban sandwich is so good there, and I really love the octopus salad too.
Can you, before we go, I just a little bit about food. What was the sandwich that your sandwich like back from your hometown? I think you talked about it.
My dream sandwich is the My Hero Chicken Cutlet, which is chicken cutlet, bacon, cheese, lettuce, no tomato, mayo.
Yeah. I think tomato ruins a sandwich. It's too liquidy.
I think tomato ruins most sandwiches. I think the only sandwich I could picture it working on is turkey, and even then I don't like it, you know?
Two things. On the flight, one of the breakfast little boxes they offered me was two Belgian waffles with turkey in the middle.
And how
I
was it?
Like, that? No, I didn't get that. It's disgusting. I got like the cheese plate. But more important.
We fly Delta?
Yeah.
Of course.
More importantly.
Comfort Plus?
No. Sat literally the last row of the flight where you have to sit at a 90 degree angle the whole flight.
Oh, with the toilet right behind you.
No toilet. It was okay. It was like the attendant station, but like you can't recline your seat. So you're sitting like perfect posture the whole flight.
Oh, Jesus.
But where's one place I should eat while I'm out here?
Oh, fuck, dude.
Like
Animal.
Your place. Like
Animal
the John
on Fairfax.
Animal.
Yes.
I think that's all meat, right?
No, it's like it's a meat-focused place, but it's not all meat. It's
I
from
think
the guys,
I've been there. Give me one more. Okay. I think I've been there.
Oh, shit. Have you had Jitlada?
No, it sounds disgusting.
It's like a specific Thai place. It's fucking
really
awesome.
What neighborhood?
It's like right by UCB Sunset, so it's like sort of in Thai town. Yeah, it's like a few blocks east of Western on Sunset.
Jitlada.
I will send you a link to it. I highly recommend it. Get the celebrity.
I have
chicken.
A baby mama named Jitlada.
you're gonna have two when you leave.
My joke this week has been Antifa. You know this like new fucking terminology for anti-fascist. It sounds like a girl that I went to high school with. She played like women's basketball. She had a kid in eighth grade.
Antifa
had a kid in ninth grade.
It's really funny that we're trying to come up with words to demonize people Antifa who are
Jenkins.
Anti-fascists.
Oh, you know my sister Antifa?
Check out Jitlada. Check out... wait, I'm shouting that to fans. For you, that's check out Jitlada. For me, if you live in LA, check out Jitlada. Also, if hit me up on @JohnGabris. Oh, here's the thing, guys. Tweet at me if other people you want me to have on the podcast. Give me some ideas. Maybe they'll see their names tagged and be like, who is this John Gabris asshole? I'll do it. Buy shirts at gabris.com/shirts. Listen to the Action Boys Patreon, patreon.com/actionboys. And there's a couple other things in the works that you'll be hearing about shortly. Andrew, thank you so much for coming
Thanks,
on the pod.
Buddy.
I'm
this
so pumped
great.
To have you. I'm so pumped to see you are still alive despite wearing a black hoodie and black sweatpants in
I
Los
lost
Angeles.
Like 10 pounds.
Smart. Yeah, it looks like you're in fight training right now.
I'm wearing a tin foil running suit.
You're on the Airdyne bike. Like, bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.